It doesn't have to be good for you. It just has to be you.
So, it's quite the statement to say we don't have a need, you know? We're so used to having needs.
Yeah, and it's making us sick. We can't handle it anymore, which is a good thing, by the way.
So what would you say to someone who comes in with that issue? Oh, I was too young. I didn't know better. Welcome back.
Welcome back, everybody. And hello from the Holy Land of Israel.
Lucky you, Rivka. I'm heading there soon, but for now, I'll just have to live vicariously.
Yeah, I
feel and that. Mazel tov to you for becoming a new grandmother.
Yes, this is a huge milestone. I can't believe, I don't know how to take the word grandmother, but I've taken on the word safta because my new grandson is Israeli, they're born in Israel. And yeah, I like the idea of safta Rivka.
Well, you don't look like a bubby, so I don't think I'm prepared to be calling you that. But it's really amazing. You make bubbyhood look really incredible and young and happy.
Thank you.
I'm so excited for you.
Thank you, Ida, and I bless you to have this feeling. It just feels so wild and beautiful. And it's just
in a while from now, though, for me.
Yes, in a while.
I've got a couple of years to go.
You do have it, but I just, you know, bless you to have it in the right time.
Yes, thank you.
It feels amazing, thank God, and I'm just grateful. It's going to be so hard to leave him when I go back to New York, but I've got little kids at home too, and got to get back to them. And I thought I'm just extremely grateful to be here now and experience this and grateful for these moments. I'm grateful that together with Ida, we can share this episode with you and that I'm able to do this from Israel with my little grandson right here.
Well, the joys of technology is that we can do this from anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's been very special for us. So yes. Today we bring you Rabbi Manus Friedman, who is a world-renowned author, counselor, lecturer, philosopher, who combines ancient Torah wisdom with modern thought to captivate audiences around the world. He hosts his own critically acclaimed cable television series called Torah Forum, Manus Friedman, and it's syndicated throughout North America. And he's actually known as YouTube's most popular rabbi.
Rabbi Friedman's first book, Doesn't Anyone Blush Anymore, became a smash hit and continues to sell many copies decades after its release. His book, The Joy of Intimacy, is empowering thousands of couples to replace their loneliness and unfulfilled expectations with a deeply soulful and satisfying relationship.
In his private practice, Rabbi Friedman has helped thousands of couples and individuals achieve fulfilling, balanced relationships through in-person meetings or remote video consultations. With the launch of itsgoodtoknow.org, Rabbi Friedman is now using the latest technology to spread morality to a wider audience throughout the world through his books, his videos, and personal meetings. And I believe he has written children's books, Rivka, right?
He just came out with a children's book called A to Z, Meant to Be, Seeing the Hand of the Creator in Everything that Happens. So it's part of the Rabbi Manus Friedman children's book series. And also, we actually interviewed the co-author of his latest book, Creating a Life That Matters. We interviewed Rivka Goldstein. That's a great book.
So that was episode 39, called How to Get a Life, a conversation with Rivka Goldstein. So if you want to hear more on the book, Creating a Life That Matters, go visit episode 39 for that.
And it's touched upon in this episode as well. Quite a few things are touched upon in this episode. There's really a very inspiring and profound message that I really appreciated and I've been thinking about a lot since we interviewed Rabbi Friedman. Ida, do you agree? Don't want to share the message yet because I want you to hear it. But how did you feel about the overall message?
I feel like this conversation was very thought-provoking and surprising in many ways. I think that Rabbi Friedman shared some things that had me questioning things that I thought were true or things I thought I knew that maybe I took for granted. And I think this conversation made me a lot more aware of certain things that are going on in the world, a lot more educated, and a lot more equipped to handle life's challenges, I think.
The part that I found very profound was the overall message of how to live our lives in the world we live in and what our role is in this world, collectively and individually, and how to look at our own unique mission in this world. And I found that very helpful when I was with my daughter and she was delivering her baby. I was thinking about a lot of what Rabbi Friedman had said in coming into this world and what our physical bodies, what our souls, what we're brought in here for, and why Hashem chooses us to come into this world. So I really appreciated that part of it. And there are also some other conversations that came up that shouldn't be taken lightly. At the same time, I do feel like this is going to lead to us doing a very big podcast interview with a panel of people, and I'm referring to dating and marriage. When you hear this in the conversation, we just really touched upon it, and it's some food for thought for all of us to kind of like contemplate on. And
that's a good way to put it, food for thought. This was the beginning of a bigger conversation that needs to be had, that I think Rafa, you and I decided that we would find a panel of experts, people that we respect, you know, but maybe marriage therapists, marriage counselors, and, you know, spiritual leaders and rabbis.
Including Rabbi Friedman.
To really get a better idea of, you know, how do we find our soulmate? That's really what it boils down to. How do we find our soulmate? How do we know that we are married to our soulmate? What are the ways of measuring, you know, our happiness in a relationship? What should we be looking for in a relationship? There's a lot we can uncover. And
there are a lot of different types of relationships and a lot of delicate and sensitive nuances in each relationship. So when you hear what is shared, keep that in mind. And we look forward to bringing you more perspectives and many more tools so that we can navigate where this complicated life that we live in, bringing two people together.
Let's just say this is the tip of the iceberg. We've got much more to
yes,
a lot more work to do.
So we hope you appreciate the overall message. And I think it's a beautiful mindset to go into Rosh Hashanah with, as we pray for our own needs to keep in mind, for our own blessings, to keep in mind what we're asking these blessings for, like what is our purpose. And also, because we have touched upon dating and marriage, we are very excited right here and now to share with you our first advertisement.
So in the past, we were approached several times about sponsorships for the podcast. And so Rivka and I decided that now would be a really nice time to start bringing in sponsors.
So if you would like to be a sponsor of an episode, of an upcoming episode, email us, rivkaandida@gmail.com, rivkaandida@gmail.com, or you can PM us on Instagram.
We thought a great sponsor to start with, one of the sponsors that reached out to us, was an amazing organization called Ten Yad. You know, a lot of people are, when they're dating, they get engaged and they dream about having a beautiful wedding. You know, they want to have a celebration that they're going to remember. But unfortunately, in this day and age, it's very hard to make a wedding, and many people can't afford to make a beautiful wedding. Putting together a simcha like that is no easy feat, and it's not easy on the wallet either.
No,
so
Ten Yad,
yeah, so there's a great organization, Ten Yad.
They enable young couples to start their lives with beautiful beginnings. They give with outstanding dignity, and it's set up like a store. You can choose top-of-the-line dishes, linens, towels, dish towers, flatware, everything to start a home with, except that these couples get it for free.
They cover the basic, they help couples with their basic needs when they get married so that they can embark on their journey with the least amount of stress possible. Let's say that's what Ten Yad does.
And so this Ten Yad auction fundraiser is now live. You can choose from an array of luxury items, a Cartier watch, a Tesla car, thousands of dollars worth of jewelry.
That's what I love about it. It's almost like a win-win because you get to bid on items that are really great and at the same time give charity. I actually, every year I get tickets at Ten Yad for years now. And we've also been sponsoring prizes. So it's cool that we do both. We sponsor and we get tickets. It just so happens they reach out to us and we're so thrilled to be, you know.
It's so special, Ida, that you're part of that. And we're very grateful to be part of sharing this really meaningful organization who does so much for young couples so that we can help them build their lives, which is a big mitzvah. We're going to put the link in our podcast notes. Look out for them. Look out for the Ten Yad auction and watch their phenomenal show. The Tenathon will be a live stream on November 6th.
November 6th.
Yes.
So that's when they're going to pick the winning tickets. Is that?
But in the meantime, you can go to the link and purchase your tickets now. It's a nice thing to do before Rosh Hashanah, and it should be a ktiva v'chatima tova for all of you. A sweet year with revealed good in every way.
We hope you enjoy this episode. It's definitely thought-provoking. And if you haven't left a review yet, we love hearing what you have to say, your comments, your feedback. Leave a review on Apple if you can. We'd really appreciate it.
Or email us.
And enjoy.
Hi, I'm Rivka.
And I'm Ida. Welcome to the From the Inside Out podcast.
We're mompreneurs and friends who love connecting through meaningful conversations.
It all started in an Uber, where we were both so inspired by each other's life experiences. And it was then and there that we decided to create this platform, because we believe in the power of growth, self-awareness, and connection.
Our goal is to bring you insights, research-backed tools, tips and shortcuts, and interviews with some of our world's greatest thinkers, leaders, and everyday heroes.
We invite you to join us as we create positive change in mind, body, and soul.
From the inside out.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
How are both of you?
Baruch Hashem. How are you?
Baruch Hashem.
I'm doing well, thank God. Actually, someone recently said to me, why does everyone just answer Baruch Hashem without actually saying how they really are?
Because they don't want you to know how they really are.
There's a new way of asking, how are you, really? I think it's the name of a book that just came out. That really makes a difference. Mm.
Or they think that you don't want to know how we really are.
It's just etiquette.
Since Rosh Hashanah is approaching and, you know, we do a lot of reflecting, we wanted to do that with you and your life. And we know that we are shaped by experiences and childhoods. And we wanted to know if you could tell us about your background and maybe share some early experiences and how they shaped you.
Where do you begin?
A little synopsis of what stands out, how your childhood shaped who you are today.
As far back as you can remember.
Wow.
Has no one ever asked you this question?
Yeah, but every time you ask, it's there's no pat answer. So let's see, it started off with 9 months.
Of, good memory.
Yeah. I was born in Prague, which was then Czechoslovakia. They changed it because no one could pronounce that. So now it's the Czech Republic, but it's a Prague. And we came to America in 1950. I was 3 years old. And we ended up, through amazing divine providence, we ended up in Crown Heights. Although my family was not Chabad. But in the 50s, growing up in Crown Heights, it was inevitable that you become curious about that building on Eastern Parkway, where there's always something happening, and there's always partying, and there's fabringing, and people are always running. They're busy, they're going, they're coming. Everybody else was trying to recover from the Holocaust, you know? And it was kind of pessimistic. As a teenager, young teenager, you know, what was going on in 770 was so appealing and so attractive because it was so alive, so optimistic. You know, the whole world was licking its wounds and the Rebbe was saying, let's change the world. Wow, what a contrast. So that was very exciting to a teenage boy. Yeah, let's change the world. And I'm still excited about it.
That's inspiring.
It's pure inspiration. I mean, how do you come out of a concentration camp and say, I want to change the world? So it was very fortunate, and I guess by divine plan and divine purpose, we ended up in Chabad. There are eight of us. We're all shluchim. We're all been good.
Can I just chime in and say that one of your siblings is my brother-in-law and a wonderful one? Yossi Friedman. Shout out.
Yeah.
And so is this something that you, did you imagine yourself being where you are today, or is this kind of different from what you had pictured?
Oh, it's very different because I couldn't imagine actually being a shliach. I was just like in awe of shluchim. The ability to explain all these deep concepts to people who don't know anything, and building communities. And I was in awe of them, jealous. I didn't think I'd ever be one.
What did you think you would be?
A carpenter? I don't know.
Seriously?
Yeah, I like working with wood.
Oh, wow.
Like construction.
So you're creative. Not surprising. You have a very creative family.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I thought maybe you were going to say singer or musician or something in that.
I'm the oldest of the boys, so I didn't know there was an Avram Fried in the family.
Right. You're the guinea pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm also the oldest, so I hear you. But then you went on to become a leader, an educator, someone who has brought so many close to Judaism. Well, what would you say are the key ingredients for inspiring others and keeping ourselves inspired?
The key ingredient is to believe in the people you're talking to. You don't talk down to them. You believe in them. The flavor of your message is completely different. It's not, come, I'll make a mensch out of you. That's condescending. And it sends a bad message. It's not, I will make a mensch. You are a mensch. The main thing is the respect you have for the people you're teaching. And then even if you don't teach them anything, you're still good.
It reminds me, and this has come up quite a bit since then. It's actually been 2 years since we interviewed Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks before Rosh Hashanah 2 years ago, Alah Shalom, where he shared that one of the most powerful things we can do for someone else is to believe in them more than they believe in themselves. And he shared that the Lubavitcher Rebbe did that for him when he believed in Rabbi Sacks more than Rabbi Sacks believed in himself. And that is what got him to become the leader and the great rabbi and orator that he was.
Yeah, the feeling that being a shliach and having influence on others is a huge blessing, usually not deserved.
So shluchim, they're accustomed normally to dealing with people who are not from, or people who are kind of seeking. But, you know, there's so many people within our community who are leaving Yiddishkeit, who feel that they need to let go of religion because it's too confining and it's too limiting. What would you say to someone who came to you with this feeling, like, I had a bad experience with Yiddishkeit, I'm done with it? How do you speak? What do you say to this person?
See, actually, that's why I moved back to Crown Heights. I figure outreach is a very good thing, but inreach is also necessary. So what is it that people who are disenchanted, what is it they want? I'm convinced that what they want is something deeper, greater, and more significant, because that's what they expect Torah to be. Judaism has to be bigger than our community. And when it's just our community, they're disappointed. They were expecting something much more powerful, much more global, cosmic. And it turns out, yeah, we got to pay our bills, and we got local politics. They want more, not less.
And so sometimes, yes, maybe even the person recognizes that they want more. You know, maybe more, wanting more is really finding themselves. That's what they're trying to do. And they feel that they have to let go of religion in order to find themselves.
Well, there are two mistakes in that. First of all, what do you want to find yourself for? Don't do that. you may be disappointed.
That's true.
finally find yourself.
I think a person wants to find themselves in order to have clarity in life, in order to have good intuition, to help them find their purpose and tap into their essence, to feel inspired, to feel happy.
But I think a very important message in Hasidus and in Torah in general is that it's not about me. It's such an important, even psychologically, it's so important. If you want to be a healthy person, the first thing you need to know is it's not about you. And the focus on self, the pop psychology, you know, the secular version of it's all about me and validating me and loving myself. And it's such a bad, unhealthy message because it's really not. And that's why people who pursue this and really get busy with themselves eventually become so sour. It's a dead end. Okay, myself, 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 and then what? It's really unhealthy. So I tell people, you're looking for yourself? You want to find yourself? Ask your friends. They know exactly who you are, but you don't trust them. So a person who wants to find themselves shouldn't spend more than an hour. Sit down, close your eyes, and tell yourself who you are. I'm lazy. I'm a liar. I have some talents. Nobody likes me. I'm not very popular. Where's the mystery? You don't know yourself? The question really is, what do I do with myself? What's the difference what I am and who I am? What am I going to do with myself? Oh, for that we have a very good answer. Serve. We are born to serve.
What about choosing how to serve?
Find where you can be most useful. Great. But don't sit there thinking about yourself until you get depressed and suicidal. You go in the wrong direction. And we have to say this over and over because all the messages we're getting from the secular press and the secular world is that the emphasis on self is producing narcissistic children and we're just choking on it. Like, enough about me, please. Change the subject. Leave the me alone already. It's deadening.
You know, it's amazing because what you just shared is essentially an abbreviated version of a lot of things we heard on the podcast. Like, don't get caught up in yourself. Ask your friends, because you need someone to believe in you more than you believe in yourself. Your friends likely know your strengths better than you do, because you're with yourself too often to be objective, you know, for better or worse. And like, also, if you want to find your purpose in life, you know, the famous quote by Rabbi Sacks is, think about that place where what you want to do meets what needs to be done, meaning this is not about you. But I think that we get lost in the where what I want to do, and then we don't even get to the what needs to be done part, because we're so consumed with ourselves and what we need from the world.
So, you know, there was this guy in India who took his parents to court. He sued his parents that they should pay all his bills for the rest of his life because they gave birth to him without his consent.
That's great.
Legally, he's got a very, very solid argument. What do you mean I have to pay my bills? I never consented to that. I didn't sign a contract.
Who won?
Yeah, you went ahead and gave birth to me. You didn't ask me. You didn't get my consent. You didn't get my approval. I never signed any agreements. What do you mean I have to?
Is this actually a story or is it a parable?
No, it's a story.
Oh, okay. So who won?
I was 27 years old in India. Both his parents are lawyers, so you can imagine he lost.
That's hysterical.
But he started a lot of people thinking, hey. I mean, really? I'm born against my will and I have to pay the bills? How come? How does that work? It's like you take me out to a very expensive restaurant and then tell me to pay? That's not nice. So it sounds funny when you first hear it, but if you stop and think about it, what is the answer? How come I have to go to school and I have to get a job and I have to pay the bills and what did I do to deserve this? Why are you punishing me? We have to realize that we don't have a life worth living. Why don't we have a life worth living? because I can't figure out what it's for. So as long as I'm having a good time, I'm fine. Whatever, life is good. As soon as it becomes a little difficult or a little disappointing, who needs this? Who needs this? So here's a perfect little story. This boy from Crown Heights went away to yeshiva in France years ago. The yeshiva in France was way too strict for him. He was a spoiled American boy, and he couldn't handle all that seriousness and discipline. So he came back after 3 months, but he came back a different person because of the first conversation he had with the dean or the mashpia of the yeshiva. He arrived, and the first thing he did is he went into the office, and he said to the rabbi there, "I need to call my mother. Which phone should I use?" The rabbi, the mashpia, said to him, "I need?" He said, is my Yiddish not good or something? Like, "I need to call my mother. Which phone can I use?" And the mashpia said, "I need?" The boy was not a silly boy. He said, "My mother needs me to call her. Which phone should I use?" And the rabbi said, "Aha, that's your first lesson. Stop lying." Pretty intense, huh?
Yeah.
You need to call your mother? No, you don't. You're a teenage boy, you're away in France on an adventure. What do you mean you need to call your mother? Your mother needs you to call her. Oh, that's true. She's been sitting by the telephone for an hour already waiting for your phone call. So tell the truth. See, this is a whole orientation towards reality, towards myself, towards life. We're so busy, we're so consumed by, "I need this, I need that." And it sounds so legitimate. "Hey, I need friends." Right, right. You need friends. Sure, you have to have friends. "I need an education. I need to eat. I need to sleep. I need to be healthy. I need to be safe. I need to be protected." Wrong. Your whole attitude towards life, towards existence, towards reality, wrong. It's like the boy saying, "I need to call my mother." You don't. The truth is, you didn't exist, and now you do. Ever wonder why?
Because God needs us.
Exactly. Not "I need him," he needs me. And what's the proof? He created me. I didn't create him.
Yeah, but what about someone who's completely given over, let's say a mother to her children, to the point where she's, you know, she's lost herself? Is that the other side of it? What is that?
That's, again, another mistake. What do you mean she lost herself? This is herself. She was being a mother too much. What do you mean too much? She's a mother. So she mothered. What went wrong?
Well, then she felt depleted because she was not taking herself into account. Like, what is that balance of
like self-care?
What do you mean she didn't take herself into account?
What self?
Herself. I had a guy who actually said to me, marriage counseling, he said to me, "I've been good to my wife for 8 years. And I've got nothing to show for it." You find anything wrong with that statement?
That he's been good to her, but he says he doesn't have anything to show. It's about him. Hmm.
So was he good to her?
Doesn't sound like it.
He was making an investment, hoping to get back.
But it could be he did really try in the best way he could, and he's feeling bitter about the fact that she didn't take it well.
Huh. So really what he's saying is, I failed my wife. Not she failed me.
Right.
So, you know, he says, what have I got to show for it? What should you have to show for it? If you were good to your wife for 8 years, what do you expect? A happy wife.
Right.
She's not happy. So something is suspicious here. If you were so good to her for 8 years, why is she not happy? Because you have nothing to show for it. So yeah, if you're mothering because you think you have to, if you're mothering because you want a reward for your efforts, you could be disappointed. But if you're mothering because you're a mother, what could be better? So what do you mean you forgot about yourself? This right. is yourself. This is your real self, and you did very well being yourself.
So what about, let's say, someone like you in a position of leadership with a lot of things going on? How do you decide? I'm sure that you get many more requests than you can handle. So like, let's just take an example like that. How do you make these decisions of, well, I need to get a certain amount of sleep, and I also want to take some time to, you know, recharge. So let's take that as an example. Like, how would you approach that from that lens?
Yeah, it's like a mother who's tired. She's not disillusioned with motherhood. She's tired. What does she say to her children? And she can say, leave me alone. I've had it. Ooh, not good. Today, the modern mother would say, it's my time now. I gave you whatever hours. Now it's my time. So I'm off duty. Not a good thing to say to your kids. For the next hour and a half, I'm not your mother. Stop calling me. It's not true. And it's not a good thing to say to your kids. You simply say, I am so tired. I'm going to sleep. That's it. You're not changing your identity. You're not changing your purpose in life. You're just going to sleep because you're physically exhausted. You're not questioning your identity and your purpose in life. And the same thing with Yiddishkeit. You know, you try, you work, you study, you learn, and then you got to go to camp and relax a little bit. Why? So that in camp you're not Jewish. You can't step out of who you are, even for a moment. So when you go to sleep, it's not because you're not who you are. The person you are needs to sleep or take a break or go on vacation to continue being who you are. Not to take a vacation from yourself. So if we could change our vision of everything, which we need to do, what would that look like? If we could realize, using that little story with the yeshiva boy, I don't need to call my mother. It's not true. Not it's bad or wrong or arrogant. It's simply not true. I don't. You know, I need to be healthy. No, you don't. Why do you need to be healthy?
Because we have to live. We have to, be the best versions of ourselves. In order to do so, we need to take care of our bodies.
Right. You have to take care of your body because you need to live. Do I? Do I need to live, really?
No, you don't need to live, but like you were saying,
but
God brought us into this world and he wants us to live.
So we're changing the whole. It's not I need to call my mother. It's my mother needs me to call her.
So this concept reminds me of what John F. Kennedy shared. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Is that essentially what you're saying?
That sounds like be noble. Be noble. You have many needs, but don't worry about that. Ask what you can do for your country. Sacrifice. No, the truth is, no sacrifice is necessary. It's not like your needs and God's needs are at war with each other. God has a need and you don't. So what are you suffering about?
So, it's quite the statement to say we don't have a need, you know? We're so used to having needs.
Yeah, and it's making us sick. We can't handle it anymore, which is a good thing, by the way. So let's talk a little more about it.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead. You talk about it.
All right. For 5,700 and some years, what motivated people to do anything at all? Necessity, right? Necessity is the mother of all invention. Why did we invent a plow? What did we need? We needed a way to produce bread rather quickly because we were dying from hunger. So death was always an immediate possibility, and that drove us to do everything we did. You got to do that, otherwise you'll die. Oh, okay, we get serious. What, do you want to die? You better plow the fields and put in the seeds. And so what motivated everything in history till today? You don't want to die, do you? Something happened in recent times where that threat just doesn't feel so serious. It's not so effective. Like people experimenting with drugs. And you say to them, you know, you can overdose and die. Makes no impression. It's like, yeah, so? And they're not suicidal. They're indifferent. Threatening people today just doesn't seem to work. Because the big threat, the ultimate threat of death, doesn't work. And why doesn't it work? It doesn't make sense. You must live your life, put up with all the difficulties, all the heartaches, all the pain, all the trials and tribulations. You must all do all of that because otherwise you're going to die. So you're telling me that I have to live so that I don't die. Something doesn't make sense here. Try that again. You have to live your life because otherwise you'll die. Is that with circular reasoning? All of a sudden, it's like, no, that don't make sense. Doesn't make sense. I should live in order to not die.
Doesn't cut it.
Doesn't cut it. You actually have 10-year-olds refusing to do their homework or clean up their room because I didn't ask to be born. Have you heard that from your kids yet?
Not yet. No, thank God. But
I didn't ask to be born. What does that mean? Are you depressed? Are you suicidal? No. I'm smart. And I figured out I didn't ask to be born because I don't need to be born. I don't need. That's why I don't ask. Nobody needs to be born. So what is this sanctity of life? Life at all costs? I don't think so. For me, life is totally unnecessary. So let's get really controversial here. The grandfather says to his grandson, wake up, you have to go to the minion. The kid says, I have to go to a minion? I don't have to. Yeah, you do, you must. You have to keep kosher, you have to keep Shabbos. You have to. You need to go. I need to? I don't need to. I have to? I don't have to. And it becomes a pointless, nasty argument. The grandfather says, you have to. You need to. You must. The grandson says, no, I don't. In fact, here, I'll prove it to you. I am not going to keep Shabbos anymore, you see. I don't have to. So unfortunately, what it all boils down to eventually deteriorates into, okay, you're going to go to Gehenna. You're going to burn in hell. In other words, you have nothing more to say. So you're resorting to threats. It's not working anymore. It's not working.
So what works? What's the alternative? What does the grandfather say?
What he should say.
What should he say? What should he say?
But first of all, in that argument, who's right, the grandfather or the grandson?
Probably neither.
Scary thing is the grandson is right.
The grandson?
Yeah.
That he's saying, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. I don't have to.
Oh, I don't have to. Yay.
I don't have to. Well, then you'll burn in hell. Okay, so I'll burn in hell. That doesn't mean I have to.
Right.
That's the part that the grandfather freaks out. He can't see that his grandson is right. Because that means that it's all over. Yiddishkeit is finished. I don't have to.
So the grandfather should say?
Grandfather should say, I was created only to serve my creator. So yeah, you don't have to. But your mother is waiting by the telephone for a phone call. So your creator is waiting for you to serve him with joy. What are you going to do about that?
The interesting thing is that he's waiting for us to serve him with joy, and we have to find the joy without our own needs.
Exactly. But it's better than that. If I stop thinking about my needs, I will have joy.
It's also interesting that you said grandfather and not father. Does that mean that parents sometimes
have their
maybe
own
have a different role?
So we will find the joy in serving Hashem, and then Hashem will have joy from us serving him.
That's perfect. And by the way, it's the only joy. When you get right down to it, I think everybody must admit the only real joy we get is from others. You're never really joyful about yourself. Unless you're a total narcissist, and then you don't even know what joy means. You're just obsessed. The only joy that is real is the joy we get from other people. It's such a common reality. I don't know how modern secular thinking is so blind to this. You're home alone, and it's lunchtime. What are you going to eat?
I can start giving you a list of options.
Rivka, you answer that. Rivka's a health coach. So.
Nine out of 10 times, you're just not going to eat lunch.
The truth is, it's much harder than, you know, I do work with mothers. It's much harder to make lunch if you're just doing it for yourself. But if you have a husband around or if you're making lunch for children, you're going to do a whole lot of a better job.
Or somebody calls up and says, can I come over for lunch? All of a sudden, you're excited about the kitchen. But for yourself, if there's some leftovers, Ali, if not, I'm not going to bother. It's a burden. Oh, but for cooking for somebody else is not a burden? No, it's a joy. So we really got to get back to normal. When the boy said,
How do you define normal?
Yeah. When the boy said, I need to call my mother, that's not normal. It's not true. It's not real. And it's not worthy. You need to call your mother, so go find a telephone.
By the way, I just want to say that maybe he was actually missing his mother.
On the first day when he arrived? I don't think so. He had other things on his mind. But he knew that he was supposed to. What makes it that way? Why is he supposed to call his mother? Because his mother needs it.
So we really need to reframe this way of thinking with everything.
And it's happening, and it's got us all confused. It's happening, and it's scaring us. So when the 10-year-old says, I didn't ask to be born, the parents panic. So what should the parents say to a child who says, I didn't ask to be born?
True. God wanted you to be born.
True. I didn't ask to be born either. We got the same problem. So who are you going to blame? Grandma? She's got the same problem. She didn't ask to be born. Adam and Chava? I mean, who are you going to blame?
So adopting this mindset, how do we know if we are doing what Hashem really wants us to be doing? How do we trust our intuition when we have a choice of, I need my sleep, or I need to go do something for someone else, or I don't need my sleep. God wants me to sleep, or God wants me to go give my children some attention.
Good. Good. If we all ask that question, we would have a perfect world. The Rebbe did this amazing thing, which is not appreciated properly at all. This was the Rebbe's revolution. It's not about you. It's not you need, you are needed. Go out into the world and serve a community. What about yourself? Really? You're going to spend your life thinking about yourself?
What about when it comes to shidduchim? Do the same rules apply? I feel like some people say you have to be selfish. You have to think about yourself.
Because actually, when you do go on a date, you do have to think about, like, what do I need in a relationship?
Or do you?
That's the only thing you should be thinking.
Yeah. Now we're asking you, do we need to think about that?
So this is another big topic, dating and marriage. Mm-hmm. It also has become so complicated because of this confusion. When you're dating, you have to be absolutely selfish. Absolutely. You know, if there's a freckle that you don't like on his nose, tell him to get lost. This is about you. That's the purpose of dating. To make sure that there's nothing about the other person that is uncomfortable or distasteful. So it's completely about you. When you get married, it's not about you at all. And if you don't remember to make that switch, you're going to be in big trouble.
So then there is a time to be selfish.
Because it leads to the ability to be selfless.
Wow. That's something so many people need to hear. It's not about you. It's about you being here to serve. But when you're looking for your soulmate, for your shidduch, it's all about you. It's all about you. I think that a lot of people don't know this. This is a really important message.
Right. So then that there's that balance also with self-care. Like there is a time to have self-care.
In order to be able to serve. But it's not.
What if someone has very high expectations when they're dating? Maybe high in the Shastman's opinion.
No. If you have high expectations, then the guy better live up to it. You don't change who you are.
Oh, so you're saying you can have high expectations.
If you do, you do. What are you going to do? Are you have a lobotomy? If that's you, then that's you. He's going to have to live up to it.
Wow.
I was talking to a guy. He said he's going out, but he can't. He doesn't know why, but he can't say yes to this woman who is very good, very special. I said, is she blonde or dark? He says, what's the difference? I said, I'm just curious. Is she blonde or dark? He says, dark. I said, before you became Frum, did you imagine yourself marrying a girl who's dark or blonde? He says, that's Yetzirah. I said, what? And you don't have a Yetzirah? Yeah, that's Yetzirah. You don't have a Yetzirah? You're getting married, you're going to leave your Yetzirah in your mother's house? That's you. Who are you kidding? Don't try to change your personality in the date.
Right, but when does a person know that they can really trust that what they want is what's good for them?
It doesn't have to be good for you. It just has to be you. If you're going to worry about what's good for you, that's what you had your first 20 years of life for. Don't start now when you're getting married. You are who you are. Find somebody who appreciates it and who will enjoy being married to you. Just like you don't marry somebody with the plan of changing him, don't marry somebody with the plan of changing you.
Yeah, I like that. But aren't we always meant to have in mind that we want to change and evolve and work on ourselves?
Yeah, but your husband has to marry you now. He has to like you as you are now.
Yeah.
And of course, you can grow together endlessly. Why not? But if he's not enamored with you now, don't marry him.
So you just mentioned the word enamored. So that can be dangerous sometimes. Like, are we meant to be enamored, or is, I'm not dating anymore, Ida's married too, but I'm saying we as in whoever's listening, and advice for our children, and for, we have a lot of singles who listen to our podcast. You've spoken about, you know, a lot about love and intimacy from a Jewish perspective, and you speak in your book, Creating a Life That Matters, about love, and that we have the wrong definition of love, and you have your own definition. And I think enamored has a lot to do with that.
Well, enamored is not the same as infatuated. Infatuation is selfish. Enamored means you really like the person you're talking to.
So infatuation is selfish?
Oh, yeah. It means you're living in your fantasy. You're not really even talking to the person you're talking to. You're talking to a fantasy. But enamored means I find nothing wrong with you. That's pretty enamored, huh?
Well, you also want the positive. I find nothing wrong with you, but I also see amazing things that I appreciate.
That would be nice too. But when's the last time you met someone you found nothing wrong with?
That's true.
That's a pretty tall order there. So what is the dating? The purpose of dating is to make sure that there is nothing about the person that is uncomfortable to you.
Right. But you do see things that are not necessarily perfect, because no human being is perfect, but you're okay with them.
Yeah. You don't care.
I think part of the problem is that, like, previous generations didn't necessarily see things this way. People got married because it was their duty. Like, there was more of that. I think now things have changed, yet the message hasn't fully resonated. So there are still people out there who are, you know, dating and either lowering their standards or marrying someone that they're not 100% sure is good for them. And I've heard stories about how people got married, but they didn't necessarily want to marry that person. So what happens if a person makes that decision and then they get married? What then? Is there still a full acceptance? Is there room for change? What happens then?
It becomes a serious problem. It's very painful. How many people tell me, going to the chuppah, I was thinking I shouldn't do this? That should never happen.
But it does happen. And I'm sure you've dealt with many couples who this has happened to. And do you have hope for these couples? And do you see change?
Sometimes and sometimes not.
Does it depend on anything specific, or is it just luck? What's your stance on that?
And it depends on the flexibility and maturity of the people involved. But it's an uphill struggle, that's for sure. It's a challenge. But it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen. No one should ever go to their chuppah with doubts.
Yeah, I think that's one of the perks maybe of this, the me generation, is that that's the upside of the me, is that in that area, they're choosing the person that's right for them.
But they're not.
Oh, they're not? Okay.
Because what does it mean? A person right for you. What does that have to do with marriage? Two people who get along very well, they should get married? Why? They're getting along very well, leave it alone. This young couple came and said, we're very much in love and we would like to get married. Would you do the wedding for us? I said, you're in love? They said, yeah. I said, well, then it's too late. You don't need to get married. That makes sense? You're getting married because of love. Well, you already have the love. Now what do you want? What are you getting married for? Well, we want to make a commitment. A commitment to what? What are you saying? We're going to be committed. What does that mean? That if I hate you, I'll still be married to you? No chance. You're getting married for love. If you're getting married for love, That is the biggest condition of all. Yeah, people, unconditional love. No. Love is a very big condition. Either love me or I'm out of here. So they get along fabulously. Why are they getting married? What do you gain by getting married?
Partnership.
You have a partnership and you get along fabulously.
Right.
You're getting married because that's the cycle of life, two souls coming together as one.
All of a sudden, you have to start talking mysticism. Two souls, you know, because there's no practical, right? You can't find a practical benefit to marriage.
Well, bringing children into the world.
So you see what's happened in our times, again, as preparation for Mashiach. We suddenly discover that whatever you have in marriage, you can have without marriage.
Right.
Anything. You can be intimate without marriage. You can have children without marriage. You can live together without marriage. What do you gain by being married?
Tax benefits.
Pretty much, that's it.
Yeah.
Now, actually, the purpose of marriage, to rephrase what the Torah says, the purpose of marriage is you don't want to be alone in the world because being alone hurts. It's terrible. When do you stop being alone in the world?
When you're married.
It's the only solution. Torah says, therefore, a man should leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife and become one. Why can't he cleave to his parents and become one? You don't become one with your parents. You don't become one with your children. The only relationship in which two people become one is marriage, even if they hate each other, but they're not alone. That's not ideal, of course. As long as you're one, you might as well have some fun at it, you know, while you're at it. But that's the purpose of marriage, to become one. It means I am not enough.
See, I can understand the confusion now. It's like we have to be selfish when we're dating, but we can't get married for love in and of itself. We're getting married because that's the only way we're not alone. There's a lot of like different moving.
But that's also a selfish thing. To get married because we don't want to be alone is because we have a need to be together with somebody else.
It sounds selfish at first, but I'm not good by myself, but with you, I'm good. That doesn't sound selfish. That sounds totally vulnerable. Okay, so let's get a little mystical. Right?
Yeah.
In the beginning, there was just God. There was just him. And he was everywhere, and he was everything, and he was perfect, and he was eternal, and he was almighty and all-capable and all-knowing. Then he creates a world. That is a surprise. What in the world for? He's so perfect. What in the world is he doing?
He had a desire.
For what? He's already perfect. Can't become any more perfect.
He wanted to keep us busy.
First, he has to create us and then. Yeah. So don't create us and there won't be a problem and everybody will be happy.
To make the imperfect perfect.
Yeah. He wanted to make a dwelling place for himself in this world.
A perfect God would do that?
Yeah. Please tell us why.
The question is a very good question. And we got to get people to ask that question.
We were delving deeply in Ida and I actually rang your nephew to give us a class because we wanted to have an understanding of the world before it was created.
Did you?
Yes. Yeah. He said yes.
And it's happened or is that?
It's happening next week.
Great. So here's the thing. Scientists are fascinated with how the world came into existence. That's because they're foolish and immature. I'm very impressed with their own credentials. The question that they should be asking is not how. What's your business how? What, you want to create a world? The question they should be asking is why? Why? There was only God and he was perfect. You have to mess all that up by creating a world. Why would a perfect being create? Why? To perfection and beyond. What is beyond perfect?
Infinity.
What's more than perfect? Imperfect?
What is more than perfect?
Okay, so it's really not that complicated. In the beginning, there was just God. He was the only existence. Are you impressed? Or do you feel bad for him?
Oh, he was alone.
Lonely.
There was just him. Wow. What wow. How would you like to be perfect? Like, if you were perfect, I could never ask you, what's new? So what's happening? Nothing. So where are you going? Nowhere. What's good about being perfect? There's nothing good.
You get to bask in the glory
of yourself.
Until you get bored.
Yeah.
Or sad.
Is that what happens in heaven?
In Gan Eden?
Yes.
Souls eventually get bored?
That's what I'm wondering right now.
It very well be, and they can't wait for Mashiach to come back into their bodies. But listen to what we know about God himself. Yes, God was perfect. He's not impressed. What's good about being perfect? Nothing. It's sterile.
But that's what we're all trying to achieve through learning, through growth. I mean, you know, we're working at getting to perfection.
Right. And that is so dangerous because as I become more and more perfect, I need you less and less. Can you imagine a guy who's married, but he thinks he's perfect? Pity on the wife. Even if the husband really is perfect, pity on the wife. Because perfect means I don't need you. Isn't that what it means? If I'm so perfect, why would I need you? That's horrible. So two things we know about God. Number one, God is not impressed with perfect because there's nothing good about it. Number two, what does make sense? What is meaningful to him? To have a relationship with us, which means, listen to this, God, as perfect as he is not enough. Just me? That's not enough. I'm perfect, but there's just me. Not enough. That's God's humility. I am not enough as perfect as I am. There's got to be more. That's humility. That's vulnerability. God is the perfect, vulnerable being. Like he's perfect in everything, he's perfectly vulnerable. Vulnerable means, what, just me? So when God said, it is not good for man to be alone, he was describing himself. And what is he saying? It's not good. There's no goodness to being perfect because then you're alone. So why did God create the world? Because he was Yochid and he wants to be Echad. Hmm. The difference is Yochid means I am the only thing because nothing else exists. So there's me to the exclusion of everybody. Echad means God is one. One means one with everything, not to the exclusion of everything. If I have you, then I'm one. If I don't have you, then I'm only, then I'm Yochid. That's why getting married is like imitating God. That's why marriage is so holy.
I think the message that perfection is not a good thing. And I just wonder why it is that there's such a huge surge in mental illness and that this message is not resonating, that we're all imperfect and that we're all yearning for connection, yet people are suffering in silence, alone, not able to be open about their experience. So I'm just wondering, you know, what your views are on this stigma that exists. Is it more in the femme communities? I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm biased because I'm a therapist, and so I see more than most people do. But I just wonder what your views are on that.
I think the mental health field has to shift its focus. Don't tell people that they have deep unresolved needs. They've got more needs they can handle already. Don't tell them more needs. If you could get them to look past their needs, you save their life and make their life worth living. I'm talking to this couple, very nasty, very angry at each other, really, really distasteful. When they finished their diatribe, I said, so you still want to be married to each other? They said, yeah. I said, well, then start being nice. Bye. You want to be married? Be nice. It was like,
I don't know if it's always as simple as that.
It is always. You just got to convince the person, right? But this couple, I said, that's it? I said, yeah, that's it. He said, wow, let's go home and be nice. Why not?
That's kind of going back to originally when you said it's one of the worst things to go to the chuppah and you have a regret about who you're marrying and you're sharing now this couple that we're not getting along and having a huge argument. Do you see change? Do you see that people can't actually pull through and change themselves and change their relationships. Do you see that often?
I do. And it's very fast. It's like 3 sessions, 4 sessions and bingo.
So it's just a switch of the mindset. Sometimes you do see it's a process, like it takes a lot of time.
Years and years. Yeah, that's the long way. But I'll tell you this little incident. This woman was complaining about her husband. A lot of complaints. So I said to her, when your husband walks in the door at the end of the day, comes home from work, he walks in the door, what do you feel? She says, disgust. I said, if I was your husband, I would never come home. Your husband knows that look when he comes home. He feels it. He sees it. If I were him, I wouldn't come home. I'm going to walk in the door and be met with disgust. I wouldn't come home. And this is his home.
So what should she do with that feeling?
I said, I feel really bad for your husband. He comes to his own home and is met with disgust? That's hell. She says, well, what should I feel? I said, you should feel compassion for him. That's a very sad state of affairs. Anyway, she called me a few days later and she said, my husband was coming home and I thought maybe I'm going to try what you said and I'm going to feel compassion for him. He walked in the door and I looked at him with compassion. He's such a nice guy. That's it. It changed everything. He's a nice guy. Yeah, when he feels welcomed, he's a nice guy. When he feels that he's disgusting, yeah, it's hard to be nice with that kind of a reaction. So look, most couples are meant to be married to each other, right? If they're meant to be married to each other, then there should be an easy way for them to do it.
Well, you hear a lot of people saying that they got married, especially in the firm world, they got married very young and maybe they were not mature enough to make decisions and they second-guessed themselves. So what would you say to someone who comes in with that issue? Oh, I was too young. I didn't know better. Because parents are making their kids wait now, like a little longer. We want to wait till you're 22, 23. Is that even the right thing?
Younger is better, without a question, without a doubt. Maturity is a funny thing, you know? How come our grandparents got married when they were 15 and it worked?
Necessity.
You know, like you said, it was more about life and death back, you know, that it was just a lot simpler.
Okay, so the point of it is that when you need to be mature, you become mature. What makes you mature? Age? Sadly, that's not the case.
No, I can agree with that.
Yeah, but it does say, like, let's say when you turn 40, that's the age of wisdom. Time does bring a certain wisdom.
Right. Supposedly.
That's what we have mentors for.
Ideally.
Ideally, yes.
I have a joke about the guy who became 60. And 60 means aged. And he says, oh, yeah, I'm so afraid of the 60. I don't want to get aged. And his rabbi said to him, look, you turned 40 and gained no wisdom. You'll turn 60 and not age. Don't worry about
it. Oh, my gosh. That's a sad joke.
Yeah. So, yeah. People get mature as needed. When they needed to be mature at 12, they became mature at 12. We feel like we don't need to be mature till we're 30. So what's the rush? So you can't blame the lack of maturity. It's the lifestyle. What kind of lifestyle allows you to remain immature till you're 30? Not a very productive life anyway. So yeah, if we got married younger, we would mature younger. That's how it works.
I do get that point of view. Like it's, I guess it's one way of looking at it. And obviously not everybody would agree, but it does remind me of this insight that someone once shared about how a lot of people are living life like they're going to die at 30, you know, so focused on their career and on things that will benefit them in the short term, you know, not realizing that there's many, many years after that people are unprepared for because of that. Because they just don't, you know, we can't see that far ahead.
But if you know you're getting married at 17, you become pretty mature at 15.
But you don't have the same tools. I mean, I'm just being open, but like I got married very young. I had my first half of the family when I was very young and my second half of my family were in my 30s. And I feel like I have more tools in my 30s than I did when I was 18.
Hopefully so.
So.
But it's a trade-off. You have more tools when you're 30, but you have more idealism when you're 15.
It's true.
20. So it's a trade-off, you know, enthusiasm versus wisdom.
Interesting.
So when you're younger, you're more enthusiastic. And that's why when they got married young, they lived with their parents. They didn't just go off, you know, into the sunset on their own. Obviously, if you get married at 15, you stay close to your parents.
But aren't you meant to leave your parents' house?
Huh?
But you're really meant to leave your parents' house.
Yeah, but next door.
Oh, so you're saying that was a good thing?
Just mentally, you could leave your parents' house. Physically.
Young, yes.
But, you know, people today get married young and they don't live next door and exactly. Move away.
Yeah, so that's not going to work. If you're getting married young, you need your parents' support. You need to...
So you're saying people should get married young and have their parents' support?
That's a wish. Not realistic right now, right? But what's the alternative? The alternative is don't get married until you don't need your parents anymore. And then you go home when you're 40 because you need your parents.
How does one get rid of worry and resentment if they, you know, what advice would you give someone now, especially with Elul? You know, a lot of people carry guilt from the past year. What are some ways to overcome that?
So here's the quote that should really be our motto in life. And the Rebbe quoted it thousands of times. Ani lo nevresi elo l'shamesh eskeini. I was created only to serve my Creator. What a relief. What a relief. So people are running around saying, don't sweat the small stuff. Overcome your difficulties. Sacrifice for your community. Compromise for your marriage. Stop, stop. No sacrifice, no compromise, no being tough. Just tell the truth. Tell the truth. I don't need to call my mother.
Oh, that's a truth that's not an easy truth to get to, but I certainly an ideal one.
And it's becoming easier because life itself is doing this to us.
Right.
Where did 10-year-olds come off saying, I didn't ask to be born?
I'm sure you come across many situations where you're challenged in the position that you're in. Do you want to share a challenge that you face as a public figure and how you overcome it? Do you find it challenging?
A little bit. There aren't really any new questions. Remember, there was a woman at Beis Chana many years ago. Beis Chana is our program in Minnesota for women. We had women from all over the world of every kind, every type. Anyway, I thought this woman was sitting there, and I can see that she has this uncomfortable look about her. So I said, do you want to ask something? You want to say something? She said, no, I don't want to ruin anything. I said, whoa, you don't want to ruin anything? She says, yeah, all the women here, they believe and they're into it, and I don't want to ruin it. I said, you have a question that's going to ruin it? Now I'm really curious. What is your question that's going to ruin it for everybody? She says, I really shouldn't do this. I said, no, go ahead. Come, please. She says, all right, you asked for it. Who created God? Okay, Judaism is over. You ruined it for everybody. You don't think we've asked that question a million times and answered it a million and two times? There is no question and there is no challenge that is a threat to Judaism. Not at this point in history. So yeah, there are questions, but we've been there, we've done that, we've covered that. Sometimes I'm talking to somebody who doesn't know that there's a godly soul and an animal soul, and I'm like, what, you still don't know that? Doesn't everybody know that by now?
Not necessarily.
That's right. There's a lot of people out there who don't know about it. But it feels like, you know, we've talked about it so much. Doesn't everybody know already?
So is that your challenge? You feel like there aren't any more new questions?
It's like redundant is what you're saying. Like it's the same things, just packaged differently.
People actually are not asking questions anymore. We don't have questions. We have problems. We have frustration. We have confusion. Nobody really has a question.
You had a billboard, big billboard, and you can write a headline on it, message that you can send out to the world that would resonate. What would it say?
It's not about me. That is so, so essential, because that's what blocks everything.
Right.
If it's about me, my life is at a standstill. It's paralyzing.
So we have all kinds of listeners. We have, you know, people from all walks of life. If you can recommend a book or a resource, what would you recommend? Or do you have a book that's one of your favorites that you tend to gift a lot or share a lot? And it could be yours or someone else's, either way.
There are good books coming out now, finally, that are not just translations of the classics, you know, which are very hard to understand, even in English. You really have to learn it. You can't just sit back and read it. And it doesn't directly relate to people's needs, to people's issues. Now, recently, it's getting a lot better. People are talking to the listeners. Online, there's so much good information. It should be turned into a book for those who read. But online, you have access to so much. Yeah. There's bad stuff, stupid stuff, but there's good stuff too.
Right.
So what would be your top, like if you were just on the spot going to share with us something to go to online, what would you recommend? Is it manusfriedman.com?
No, it's goodtoknow.org.
Oh, is that what it is? It's goodtoknow.org.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will include that link in our
Or Rabbi Jacobson or Rabbi Chase Taub or yes. Ronnie Fine in Canada, Josh Gordon, excellent for those who are ready to learn the text.
We're lucky to be in this generation. There's a lot more available.
I have people who tune in once a week to listen to some learning from New Guinea, in the jungles of New Guinea, where they have to walk hours to get to where there is service, where they can get internet.
I actually met a woman recently who is becoming a convert, and she said that a lot of the reason she wants to become a convert is because she started learning your classes.
That's amazing.
We have taken a lot of your time, but I actually skipped over a question. This is our first episode we've done with spontaneous questions. We usually script them before and give people an opportunity to think about their answers. But you had said to me, let's do it spontaneously. And this ended up being a very deep and profound discussion that we are very excited to share with our listeners. There was one question I skipped over and I'm very nervous about asking it, but you said you don't get a lot of challenging questions. Maybe you're going to find this challenging, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to share with us an answer, especially since we're coming to a new year and it's an opportunity to share a new kind of perspective or answer on this question that people have often asked me. And Ida and I have this question for you, in that you shared a video about dating. People were asking you questions on dating, and you had shared something to the effect that, since our episode does have some dating aspect to it, something to the effect that they were asking you if they should share if they've been sexually abused, and you had said that it's not necessary to share that, and you had compared it to if someone has diarrhea. And we thought maybe this clip was taken out of context, Or maybe this is what you intended to say. And we wanted to know what the deeper discussion was behind this. We figured there probably is one so that we can share. We'll see if we end up sharing this on the platform, but we wanted to hear your answer. Mm. I hope it's okay to ask.
Yeah. It's not very deep, but it is completely out of context. Yeah. We weren't talking about dating. I was in Israel. I was talking to a group of counselors who deal with children who were molested. So we were talking about the different methods of how to move people past their trauma. Also, we were not talking about serious violence, not rape. We're talking about, you know, inappropriate touching, and we were talking about how to encourage recovery. I think everybody agrees that if a child comes home and says, I was molested, the worst thing you can do is freak out, because that scares the child and traumatizes them again. So we all know a kid comes home and says, I was molested. You got to be calm. You got to be reassuring. You got to tell the child that there's nothing wrong with the child, right? But to say, oh, I'm going to go out and kill him. I'm going to shoot him. You're just scaring the kid more. What is the ultimate healing? The ultimate healing is when you can laugh at it. Until you can laugh at it, you're traumatized. So that's what we were talking about. Instead of building it up as how horrible it is, you got to talk it down, because you're talking to the victim. So people got upset because, well, you're telling the perpetrator that it wasn't so bad? No, I'm not talking to the perpetrator, talking to the victim. And the victim has to know that their life is not over. There is a way back. In fact, I was talking at Beis Rivka, and one of the girls said, why do we learn Chassidus? It's so irrelevant. I've never heard that before. I mean, Chassidus, of all things? So I said, it's not relevant? She says, no. I said, if your friend told you that she was molested, what would you say? She says, what does that have to do with Chassidus? What did the Rebbe tell us about Hanukkah? What is the Rebbe's view of Hanukkah? The Rebbe's view of Hanukkah is that the biggest miracle of all was that the Jews went looking for pure oil and didn't use the oil that was available. So think about this. The Chassidische insight into Hanukkah. What happened Hanukkah? We were in the Beis HaMikdash. We were pure, innocent, and holy. And some evil came and violated our holiness and our innocence. Now, once you're violated, you figure, okay, I'm going to have to live with this. So use the oil that is not so pure. The miracle was that the Jews said, no way. I'm not going to live with this permanently. I'm going to get my innocence back. How do you do that? You dig a little deeper until you find that bit of oil that cannot be contaminated.
And Hashemah.
Huh? And you light your menorah with that. So this is not relevant?
That's beautiful.
A great analogy or truth.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, there's little clips that go around and people just make assumptions about things. I would have thought that would be one of your challenges. Like, if you find that challenging, that little clips go around and then people criticize and...
That's not challenging. That's painful. That's just painful.
Yeah.
But, you know, the internet allows for that, obviously. They weren't there at the event. And all they're hearing is this little clip, which was never meant to go public. It was, you know, just for in-house trainers, for the counselors. By the way, one of the counselors sitting there said, wow, this helps me so much. I was molested, and this changes everything. And he went and put it online.
Oh, wow. Well, because he thought maybe it would be helpful to, I don't know.
Right.
But thanks for bringing that up, because.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for sharing.
And thank you for giving us your time. This was very generous. of you. And we very much enjoyed this conversation, and we can't wait to.
This is necessary stuff. This is not optional.
Yeah.
We always end with a quote. Do you have a favorite quote? One of your favorite quotes.
You mean a holy quote or my own?
Your own and a holy one. Isn't yours holy?
Yeah. The best mantra. My life is not for me. That is the solution to most of our problems.
And may that resonate in the month of Elul with our listeners and with us, and spread that light to the world and that message.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Friedman.
Thank you.
Sivach Simateva.
Sivach Simateva.
To you and your family.